Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.
Well, I think everybody has met me by now, so I guess I can go on without any introduction.
This is Ray.
Yeah, I'm Ray Schneider. Hi. I wanted to start by saying, and it's really tough to follow on from Russ Burial and the Shroud University, but I'm really totally in support of Russ's efforts. Knowledge is a rather tenuous thing. We often don't realize how tenuous it is, but today we don't know how to dye Phoenician purple, and today we don't know how to make battleship armor that was built as recently as World War I, because much of the knowledge in the world is in the minds of men. It's not written down, and if it is written down, it's not all written down. And so knowledge can be lost in a generation if it isn't passed on and if it isn't supported. So we need to recognize that this generation has an obligation, and that obligation is to pass on the baton to succeeding generations. Failing that, the Shroud will once more decline into the state that it was in at some point prior to 1890, the knowledge of a few, select few, who carry the banner. But we'd like to see it more widely understood. So having said that, let me... we need to involve the future generation. What I want to do today is provide a summary account of a project that's dear to my heart, which is developing focus projects. It's actually something I've been trying to do at my college, mostly with very little success, because students are very episodic. They want to do just one thing. They don't necessarily, and the university is set up to do things sort of semester-oriented. But what I'd really like to see, no knowledge never advances that way. It doesn't advance in one semester sound bites, so to speak. You can't do a little project. Pride knowledge really is a web. And it has to be, you kind of dive in and you make a contribution and someone else picks up your contribution and carries it forward. So I wanted to just talk today about the notion of focus projects to involve student researchers in the Shroud adventure. A focus project is vision-centered. It's not one thing, it's a more general thing. So it's ongoing and it forms part of a larger reality. Each contribution to a focus project should advance the goals of the project, but is not necessarily an end in itself. So it is episodic elements, but they are part of a larger matrix. The goal of the focus projects that I'm going to present today, and they're quite limited. I'm going to only talk today about 11 projects very briefly. But the goal is in the long term, is understanding the Shroud of Turin. That's a very general goal. It's a very large goal. understanding has to be built one brick at a time, to exercise a construction metaphor. You have to build a foundation. I think Julio and the whole Shroud Science Group, you know, was really engaged in a kind of what's inspiring to me, this whole business of trying to build the list. I think the list is an admirable goal to try to focus in and say, what do we really know? What is known with some certainty? What is known that's perhaps still contested? And what is speculative? And try to find where to further the knowledge. So we've got a lot of knowledge down here, and we're trying to build greater knowledge all the time. Knowledge requires tools. To build knowledge, you require tools, a baseline knowledge, where you're starting from, the lower tier of bricks, And then you need to do work. Now, I'm primarily focused on image analysis for a lot of reasons. One is I don't have to worry about as much about, you know, where did my sample come from, and, you know, it's all pretty straightforward. And once I get an image, I can work on it and try to understand it. So if we restricted our attention to image analysis, and I'm doing that because that's what I have access to, we need materials, which are detailed images, analysis and programming tools, which are readily available. So from a student point of view, if you put these kinds of things together, you can build a focus project kit. So I'm kind of envisioning that we put together, and I'd like to enlist some support and help for this, some sort of a starter kit, if you will, to help students get involved in Shroud science. And it doesn't have to be restricted to image analysis. We can figure out other things. There could be chemical experiments students could do on linen, and so forth. So some of what I'm going to talk about very briefly is a bunch of projects. I have 11 projects here. Some of them are more interesting than others. They're all sort of in the general matrix of image processing, so I'll talk about sort of a title, a brief synopsis, some of the goals. Some projects can be divided into sub-projects, and that's the whole idea of a focus project, is it's a matrix, a network of things that move forward, and if you can get students involved, then one student or one group of students builds on this. I frankly think Julio has illustrated the concept beautifully with his students. I'm truly inspired by his success in involving students over there. I wish I had anything vaguely resembling it. The first project I want to talk about is the one I call Universal Coordinate System, and I sort of put this one first in honor of Mario Latandresi, I'm not good at pronouncing complicated names. Schneider is about as far as I ever got. Yeah, it's good German names. But Mario inspired me, and he brought out to the forefront the fact that we don't even have a universal coordinate system for referring to the Shroud of Turin, and especially if you go cross-image. It would be nice to have an absolute coordinate system where I say, here's two coordinates, the upper left-hand corner, the right-hand corner, and that coordinate system is a universal system, and I can just go plug that then into with a little data about each image, and boom, up comes that portion of the image in that particular image. So universal coordinate system, this is something people that are geometers, people who like to do complex, affine, I'm not sure I even understand the thing, but these complicated geometrical transforms, you could take one, and this is the image on the left is Durante 2000. The image on the right is Schwartz 1978. The idea would be to be able to take a coordinate, an absolute coordinate system, and apply it, and boom, you get through that, you can get both images and if you're doing some research. Now, that's really helpful if you want to compare among images. Now, right now we can do it, but we do it manually, we do it imperfectly. It would be cool to have a universal coordinate system. Color normalization is a second research area where we take, to what degree can I transform one image color space into another image's color space? And if you look at Durante 2000, it doesn't look like Schwartz 1978. The colors are a lot different. How close can I create a transformation system that moves the color space of the one image into the color space of another? You might need to know something about the statistics of the illumination and other things, but that would be part of building a database about the images. So that would be an interesting exercise that I think would be helpful for studying multiple images. The issue here isn't taking one image and studying it, but what can you do across a spectrum of images? color segmentation, which I sort of was the focus of the presentation I gave, is to create algorithms for dividing the shroud up analytically into various categories so that you can apply an algorithm to the data, and the algorithm to search out and identify and classify every area of the image in objective terms. Banding studies, which is a subject near and dear to my heart, there's so little that's been done with the transmitted light images that it's sort of a shame. These images are out there. Well, I'm not sure that they're out there exactly, but they're available. You can get transmitted light images from the 1978 Stirport. And there's all kinds of things you can do with transmitted light images, including get estimates of the amount of blood on the shroud, because you can measure how opaque, how much light's penetrating, and compare it. So you can compare the transmitted light and the reflected light of the blood and get some ideas that go beyond what we currently know analytically about the blood. So that's just an example. I'm very interested in the degree to which you can correlate sort of the bands, the density bands that are reflected in the transmitted light image with the bands, and there's all kinds of bands. There's a kind of a longitudinal band that runs down the center of the image. There's a lot of little horizontal bands. Some of them are related to the cloth itself. Some of them seem to be related to dirt and that is accumulated on the surface of the shroud. And John Jackson did a lot of work on studying the way the shroud was potentially displayed in Constantinople by pulling it out of a box. Well, if it was being pulled out of a box, there were various kinds of rollers and things. Those things, if you've ever fooled around with the window shades and other things, you discover that over a period of time, dirt accumulates. And you get repetitive, it's like a roller printer. You get sort of repetitive dirt. So it's possible, for example, that if you studied the dirt distributions on the surface of the shroud, you could get a better understanding of whether or not you can show evidence that, in fact, it was displayed in Constantinople that way. I think John's done a lot of work trying to do that. The study of the blood markings is just a powerful area to study. This is, by the way, an application of that median split to a larger image. So I distributed the densities and I cut the density. I made all the pixels above the halfway mark black and all the ones below white. And you get a really nice, it's kind of like a contrast stretch. Boom. Everything that was above one threshold, it's called a threshold. You can do it in anything, but it's fun to do it with an algorithm, because then you know that the contrast stretch, something about where you cut the contrast. These are all slides, two of them anyway, are slides from my other presentation where I was trying to study the stripe and interstitial color distributions and then map them using false color substitution, the wrist wound and the chest wound. And this is the same sort of thing done on the back. What I would like to do at some point is run algorithms to screen for the scourge marks in detail. Some of the work that's been presented at this conference has already shown that people are working that problem. It would be nice to do that analytically. And that's a problem that can be done in slices. You can do the scourge. You can then take the data from the scourge and do inference of the design of the flagrum, and then go up the spectrum to study the process of the scourging, because you should be able to integrate, and you might be able to get to the point of being able to say this was a strike of the scourge, and do it all analytically. You might get the impression that I'm anal about analytically. I am, because I think if you do it analytically, it's incontrovertible. Once I give you an algorithm, nobody can say this is subjective anymore. Here's the algorithm. I ran it. Here's what it produces. I used to do that when I was a submarine researcher for catching submarines. And one of the wonderful things about computers is we talk about garbage in, garbage out. With computers, you can get to sort of garbage in, gospel out. People write models, and I used to write submarine signal models. And it was really kind of remarkable. If I ran a submarine signal model, and then I got up and I said, here's my data, submarines can be detected with this new technology, yada, 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 and somebody would say, how do I know? I'd say something like, well, I ran it against the Mark I submarine signal model. Now, if I said, well, this is my expert opinion, everybody said, oh, yeah, well. But if you say, I ran it against the Mark I signal model, everybody salute. I always thought that was really weird. But that's the deal. If you can show that that you can do it with an algorithm, everybody kind of has to salute. Yes, it's not just, I think I see. The computer doesn't think. It just sees. The algorithm says it's there, something's there, that at least meets that filter that the algorithm provides. Also related to the work, I think there's a tremendous amount of work that could be done on shroud feature classification spaces. There's all kinds of things you can study. Each individual feature becomes a study in its own right. We've seen that with flowers. We can certainly argue that there have been a lot of things that could be studied on the shroud that have been totally neglected, or nearly totally neglected. The dirt is an example of one that I mentioned, but also I love these drips. You know, if you look closely at the shroud, you'll see these patterns of drips on several locations on the shroud that appear to be maybe when the shroud was lying on the face of an altar as a paten at Easter time, as the altar cloth at Easter time. It looks like someone carrying the wine, kind of drip, 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 drip. There's several drips. There's wax, possibly wax. Other things. On those markings have been essentially neglected, and they may have deep historical or other kind of evidentiary significance. And if they aren't studied, nobody will ever know.
They may have been removed, too. They may have been scraped away, too.
Yeah. Thank you, Turin, you know. A seventh one, this ought to be near and dear to Russ's heart. It would be really helpful. I mean, if you start doing studies like this, one of the problems you have is there's so much literature, there's so much research, and it gets lost. I mean, how many of you have read how many papers, you know, or even know where to find the papers? Somehow or other, I think while papers were good in the past, data structures and databases are better if they can be built up. So it would be nice to develop a total taxonomy so you can create a data space of the shroud images, and not just the images, but maybe the literature and so forth. And this kind of feeds into Shroud University, Russ. Was it Pete Schumacher was mentioning this the other day, and I say to myself, yes, Pete, you're right on, because I was thinking that myself, and I had this slide on, I knew this slide was in my presentation, I thought, that's what we need. We need documents and images and a database structure and a search structure and an integrated way of going, kind of like the GIS databases. My buddy across the hall at the college works with geographical information systems, and he's always bringing ArcGIS up and going click, 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 and bang, bang. You can kind of overlay on the image all the data. So, we want to see the topology of this region, click, and there's the relief diagram. You want to see how the rivers and what the watershed looks like, click, there's the watershed. Well, if we had something like that on the shroud, wouldn't that be terrific? That's a lot of work, but it would be absolutely awesome.
Yeah, let me just comment on that. On your very first slide, you have a grid up there.
could be a point on a shroud image. It could be, and it could link to all the articles. It could link to image analysis. It could be really absolutely fantastic. And by the way, there's enough work here to keep students working for the till the next millennium. So there's no shortage of projects that are behind this focus project. Weave Rider. I've mentioned Weave Rider as just a slang kind of name for a concept. Ever since I saw the first Mark Evans micrograph, and I looked at these little bricks, in essence, where the shroud weaves over, I thought to myself, you know, every single one of those things could be individually characterized and studied, and wouldn't that be absolutely stunning? And now, all of a sudden, somebody went and scanned the shroud with credit card images, and out there in the universe, there is a 12.5 or so gigabyte image of the shroud. Huh? I know, but, you know, somebody's got it. It's being put in. Well, I mean, we got to, the way the Crusaders stormed Acre, I think we need to storm Turin and say, hey, guys, let's make you a deal. You know, we'll let you out if you give us some data. The Siege of Turin, that would be good. So, but this would be an awesome project, and I personally think just to do prototypes, you could use the Mark Evans micrographs. Take the Mark Evans micrographs, and okay, you can build this project in microcosm, and if you ever do get the images, wouldn't that be cool? I mean, we're talking ultimately cool.
Mark Evans images are amazing.
Huh?
Those images are amazing.
I know they are. I got the Mark Evans images because I got them from you. Barry Schwartz has a lot of really cool images, and if he doesn't have them, talk to this guy sitting next to him. Giulio Fonti, you know, has some good images. So, and any place we can find good images, this would be a real boon to doing shroud image research at any rate. Blood flow analysis. I'm not talking now about static so much as dynamic. There's two levels of analysis of blood. One is kind of what's sitting there, and then the second one is how did it get there? You know, how does it flow? What are quantities? And boy, that's where the transmitted data could be handy, because the blood that's thicker, you know, kind of pooled, and blood that's thinner, you ought to be able to track blood and serum and get a lot of data about and maybe infer the flow sequencing in some detail. That would be interesting. Well, we've seen the three-dimensional. I'm almost ashamed to put this slide up, since the three-dimensional stuff we saw yesterday was so awesome. I'm still kind of in shock on how terrific some of those images look, and I want them. Can I offer myself in indentured servitude for a short time and maybe acquire some? Those were just awesome. But three-dimensional data, especially VP8, tends to be very noisy. And one of the things I was really impressed yesterday was how well they did a really nice job of cleaning that up. I kind of like sort of cheating in a way. Unless I know how they did it, I'm not sure how they smoothed that data out. Is that a proprietary secret, how you did that? Anyway, that's a project, and I wanted, I don't know if Dee German's probably bailed on us, but Dee impressed. I've had this slide, which comes from Dee's work, which was published in the Albuquerque Proceedings years and years and years ago. And that was one of my inspirations for staying interested in the shroud, getting really interested in the shroud. I've always been interested in the shroud, but when I saw these pictures, Father Atterbein sent me a copy of the proceedings back in about 78, actually around the time that you guys actually went. He sent me the proceedings.
Hang on to the 77 one.
Yeah, well, I have a copy of that, and that's a wonderful. And this was the thing that Dee had presented. I only got a couple more minutes, but then I don't have a whole lot more to say. Replication. Science is not an isolated affair. It's not done by individuals, it's done by generations of people. Real science isn't science until it's been replicated. It's all, up till then, it's just a finding of an isolated investigator. And relatively, not nearly enough replication work has been done in the Shroud area. Now, some of the researchers here, you know, have been working really hard to do that, but a lot of them are kind of like prophets crying in the wilderness, you know. And I know Alan feels that way sometimes, at least I'm pretty sure that he does. I mean, he's still working on me. He's going to convince me maybe one of these days that there's some flowers there, but I like the big one. I'm kind of real shy on all these little things and little berries and whatnot, so.
If you write the right algorithm.
Huh?
If you would write the right algorithm.
That would be cool. We need to work on that. That would be, that's another project for, if we can kind of find a way to do some morphological transformations and then sweep the shroud under computer control. You can't argue, you'd be back to the discussion of, you can't argue with the machine. If it meets the algorithm, this is what the machine says. We find it with algorithms, then I trust it more than I think I see kind of thing that Ray Rogers was always complaining about.
So maybe we don't have to wait for the students.
Huh?
So maybe we don't have to wait for the students to meet together.
Well, I don't know. I only have so many days left in this world. And they keep making me teach students. This takes away valuable time for doing really meaningful stuff. Stuff I'm more interested in sometimes. So replication, though, is really important. It establishes results on a firmer footing. Ensures that things possibly overlooked by prior investigators have another chance, another shot at it. Some of the examples would be studies of the fold marks. I thought the water stain study a couple of years ago that said, hey, these water stains are a hell of a lot, excuse my friend, are a whole lot older than we thought, maybe. And I thought that was pretty fascinating because everybody just taking it for granted that these were from the 1532 fire. So these things can revolutionize thought. Okay, so then there's how do we do this? Well, my thought is the Shroud of Turin focus project kit might be a way. I need to talk to people about how the problem here is I don't own any of the images. In fact, I was talking to Julio yesterday. Julio doesn't own the images he sent me, so we got a problem. And Barry's got at least some images, but he and everyone is concerned that if we make really detailed images, how do we control and make sure that they don't get abused? And that's,
they're going to wind up on T-shirts and coffee mugs.
Yeah, well, but they, you know, there is a lot of good quality images out there anyway, so I'm not sure how much we need to worry about that, but we need to be concerned that we at least address it professionally.
You don't need to worry about it, but my name's attached to them. I need to worry about it. That's the answer to your question.
Yes, I understand that, but what I'm saying is that the images are out there. There are images good enough for T-shirts out there everywhere. So if we're...
The Andre A's are everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought I'd put a slide up of the final objective, the Shroud Science Group. The final objective, in my mind at least, is understanding all the characteristics of the Shroud of Turin to the extent possible. And then beyond that, of course, are the implications, perhaps, of that understanding. So I want to thank you very much. It's been a pleasure not only speaking to you, but coming to this conference. It's just been a wonderful conference. Thank you.
Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.